Sanse, welcome to the Métis Voices Radio. You can reach us on the bbsradio.com, Station 2, the live chat, the chatter hall. In the U.S., Canada, the toll-free number is 888-228-4494. Worldwide, toll-free 877-489-6350. And you can also go for direct lines. Go to the BBS Radio, www.bbsradio.com, BBS Station 2 on the right-hand side. Tonight, I'm very honored to introduce our special guest, Senator Thelma Shalafu. Now that you are retired from political life, do they still call you and refer you to as Senator? Welcome, Thelma.
Hi. Hello,
Thelma.
World.
Yes, you betcha. This is a very exciting time for me to talk to you on the radio. Now, let me say something. Do they refer you as Senator? Is that what you're in your title life?
No, they usually refer to me as Thelma, but I'm the Honorable Doctor Thelma Shalafu, but I'm Thelma to everybody.
Yeah, that's good. So, yes, I'm just here in Vancouver right now. I'm just here with my family. I just had a recent passing of my brother on Saturday, so I'm here with my family. So I'm doing this radio show from my niece's place. So anyway, so you can just bear here with the noise. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
Well, first of all, I really want to give you my condolences. I'm so sorry that I never had the opportunity to meet him.
Yes. I'm with family right now, which is making me feel very good. So one of the questions I'd like to ask you right off the bat is, where are you residing now?
Well, now that I had to quit driving, I said I had to leave the bush, so I'm living in Edmonton.
Okay. Beautiful. So, listen. So, tell us about. What about your? Is there a lot of? You're living in a Métis community, of course, Edmonton, of course, right? Is there a lot of community stuff going on?
There always is, but I find Edmonton is a lot different than our small communities up north. There's a lot of formal meetings and gatherings and a lot of things going on, but they seem to be a bit isolated. You know, each area has their own little territory. But I do a lot of work in St. Albert. St. Albert is what they call a bedroom community outside of Edmonton. And that's where I have the Machif Institute. And St. Albert is totally different. St. Albert is a Métis community and has been for hundreds of years, long before the Europeans came. The Métis and the Crees that have lived in that area there, and that's where our family is from.
Yes. I do also, if the listeners are listening to you, I have to say this, that you know that your grandfather and my mom's grandfather were brothers.
Yes,
and so we are related. So this is a very exciting time for me to talk to you about. Can you tell us about your life as a Métis child growing up in your area?
Well, I was born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, and we were raised in a small Métis community just on the outskirts of Calgary in the early days. I was born in 1929, and so I was a child of the Depression, and we lived way out. At that time, it was outside of Calgary, of course, now it's in the middle of Calgary. But it was a small Métis community where we had a large extended family. And so that's where I was raised. And it's so interesting, too, when I look at the difference in the way people live today compared to the way we lived in those days. Even though I was a child of the Depression, we weren't hungry. We all always had the largest garden. And our family from the north always came down with the meat and the fish, and then we gave them the vegetables and things. So it was a bartering system. But we looked after each other within the family. And now with what they call the nuclear family, it's our children have lost that identity of family.
I think the fast pace has taken over our family values and have taken our kids away from us from a lot of the family life. What do you think?
Well, there's several reasons for that. My granny took the family down south there, and so that they didn't have the involvement of the residential schools. Although my dad and my Uncle Henry went to Dunbow Indian Boys School down in Calgary, which was terrible. When their mother died, Father Lacombe put them in that Dunbow Indian Boys School, which was a Blackfoot boys school. Can you imagine two little Cree French Métis boys going into a Blackfoot boys school at that time? Because the
wow.
Blackfoots and the Crees were always, and they still are today, enemies.
Yeah,
that old feud is still alive and well today. And
wow.
So can you imagine what it was like for those two little boys going into that school there?
Yeah,
and
that's
so,
right, yeah.
But in the meantime, they grew to be good, honest, strong men. And that was the difference, because their family, their extended family, never forgot them. So this is why I find the extended family is so important, and our children don't have the opportunity today to relate to their own extended family.
That's right.
And that's what gives us our identity.
Yes.
And our children don't have an identity for many reasons, but that's, in my opinion, that's one of the main reasons, that they don't have an identity, because they don't have the extended family and the relationship with the families, so that they know who they are.
That's right. I remember as I grew up, I only had about three or four of the close uncles, you know, to talk to, sort of thing. But I remember my mom had lots of brothers and sisters, you know, aunties and uncles, and yeah, I remember that. Now I'm relating to that to now with my own kids. That, mind you, my kids right now are very close to their aunts and uncles and to this things. But I was lucky. I'm very lucky because of my situation of the city life of us all sticking together and stuff like this. But hey, it's not all families are fortunate like this, and I can understand why. So there you go.
Exactly.
And
then of course you find here, especially here in Alberta, and I'm sure it's in British Columbia and other areas of our world, is that our traditional lifestyle was totally turned upside down when the industrial development took place, especially in the northern parts of Canada. When I first started organizing and I went up north, I was absolutely amazed. It was like going back 50 to 75 years when I went, and I was there in the late 60s and the early 70s when our industrial revolution was just taking place.
Oh.
But our people have to be so strong because they survived. So there's a lot of very serious social issues, but still, it took the Englishmen between 300 and 500 years to go through their industrial revolution. They expected our people, our ancestors, and our relations to go through it in 30 years or less with absolutely no support. And so now we are facing the terrible, terrible social issues such as the alcoholism and the family violence and the drugs and things like that, because there was no social support services and no stability for our children and our families then.
Yeah, you know, it is really tough now. So my next question is that why you became a senator? Or how did you become a senator?
Oh, the good Lord only knows why I became a senator. I had started.
Yes, I remember because...
I remember when they said that you were a senator and you were very vocal, and I wish I would have paid more attention to, you know, what was going on in that sort of the political life sort of thing. So give us an insight of what you had to go through and all this stuff.
Well, when I first was appointed to the Senate, and I went with the Liberal Party. I was never, ever part of the Liberal Party, but I always voted for the Liberals because I was of that opinions and that mind thinking. Their policies were what we were fighting for, really. And when I got down to Ottawa, and I was sitting there the day after I was sworn in, and there was a man got up. They were debating the Canada Pension Plan at the time. And this man got up on the other side of the chamber, and he stood up and he said, everybody in Canada has communication. Everybody in Canada can afford an RRSP. Everybody in Canada does not need the Canada pension. And I'm getting angrier and angrier. And I said to this fellow, the colleague sitting beside me, I said, I have to respond to this man. Because I had just come down from Trout Lake in northern Alberta. And I know, and for 35 years I had been working with our people up in that whole area in the north. And so, and he said, well, stand up and the speaker will recognize you. I stood up, and did I ever tell that man off? Because we don't have communication all across Canada. We have a Mid-Canada corridor where there's no communication. And our people need the CPP. And I told him my experience as a single parent. And I was upset when they took the CPP. But when I got to be 65, I really appreciated it because I needed it. And so, and I went on and on and on. Oh, I ended up with a standing ovation. But I didn't realize that I was supposed to wait for a maiden speech. So that was my maiden speech. But they knew who I was, and they knew that what I was talking about was true because I had been there. Yeah. And so that was makes the difference. Another thing I found out is that when I went into that upper chamber there, people did not know who we were as people, as human beings.
Wow.
By the time I left, Dale, they knew who we were, that we weren't Indians and we weren't half-breeds, that we were Cree, and we were Ojibwe, and we were Mohawk, and we were Métis, and so they saw, they learned the difference. They learned the social issues, and I drove it home as best I could for the 7 years I was in the Senate.
Wow, that's it. That's a good story. Was there any other incidents that made you give you the stars that you welly deserve?
Well, it was every day pretty well, because there was issues brought up, and I can't totally blame the senators, but in Canada here, I found that the dividing line was the boundary between Manitoba and Ontario, and nobody knew about us, and so I really had to take and just hammer it through. I ended up being the vice chair of the Northern and Western Caucus and the chair of the Alberta Caucus because I took those positions because people had to listen to me. They had to listen to what I had to say. In our housing, when the government took and transferred all our social housing to the provinces, they destroyed our affordable housing. They destroyed our opportunities to put decent housing, put our people in decent housing. You know, I had worked on that before in the early 80s, and we had wonderful, really good programs for housing. And, you know, and it was things like that. So this is, it was a daily thing, really, and the statements that I made. You know, when our boys were found frozen to death in Saskatoon, I raised a big stink about that and challenged them. I went to Saskatoon, and I challenged them in Saskatoon. And so if you have the ability, we must stand up and tell the story, because most of our people don't have the strength to tell the story.
Yeah. Yes, I totally agree with you. There you go. Now that you've retired from political office, What are you involved with now?
Well, you know, you can never really retire from political office, because when our people are in problem, you know, have trouble and they have issues, and they say, well, we'll phone Selma. So, you know, how do you say no to people that are hurting? You can't. But
no,
what my biggest thing is here is that, and I've watched it through the years, unless we learn our own history and unless we start telling our historical story, the positive side of it, our children will always suffer. We must have our stories told, the contributions that the Métis have played in the development of this country. And I just got another article by a gentleman when he spoke in Missouri, and he talked about, you know, Lewis and Clark would not have even gone halfways if it wasn't for the Métis. Sacagawea was there, and they had a wonderful novel about her. But then I'm reading this, and this man is giving names of the Métis, and he states in his speech that, you know, it was the Métis that were there. Lewis and Clark would not have discovered it. You know, that's the contributions that we have made. In Western Canada here, the same thing. In St. Albert, St. Albert is really the homeland for the Métis from Alberta and from all points north, east, and west, because it was in St. Albert that the people stopped to get their supplies and everything to migrate into BC and to migrate into the territories and to migrate all over. Yours and my family, we're from the Villeneuve side of the Métis. And did you know that he would have been your great-great uncle, my grandfather? He was the vice president of the Half-Breed Association in 1895 in St. Albert.
Did you know that he
was on the committee negotiating for a school in St. Albert in 1877?
No, I didn't know that.
This is what, and our children need to know that, because that gives them the identity to stand up and be proud of who we are.
You betcha. I totally agree. I'm now getting my children right, and I'm telling them about this program and telling them what I'm doing. And they say, my kids are going, yes, Dad, this is what we need. This is what we need to share with the youth today, because, like you says, we need to pass our traditions on, because we were never people, from what I've understood from talking to elders, they were never people to go writing books and writing it down. It was all through word of mouth and verbally and hands on, and this is how our lives have been going on for years and years. So, and
I agree. The Métis, so, Dale,
yes.
The Métis did write. We have in our institute, and you have been to our little Mischief Institute in St. Albert that I've got started there. The Métis wrote, and we have the documents. And there was a book that has just been come out in print called The Alberta Métis Letters. And it's from the 1930s.
Wow.
And Policy Review and Annotation by Denis Rowe. But these are the letters from our old leaders, and it's amazing. The letters are talking about the movement, the Métis movement. They're talking, and it's proof. The Oblate Fathers, we have hundreds of letters from the Oblate Fathers that worked in this area here. And they all weren't bad. They all did not do the terrible things that they've been accused of doing. But they wrote, and they wrote. And I've had two books given to me in the 1700s, written in the 1700s, regarding our people. We have Louis Riel, who was a scholar. We have Joe Dion, who is a teacher here in Cahiewan, and he was the leader of the Métis movement here. So that, yes, there are three different peoples of the Métis, and it was Sir John A. Macdonald that really forced it, because when we were conquered in Batoche, and he said the Métis will die because the ones that speak Cree and the ones that follow the traditions of the Cree will go to the Cree, and the ones that follow the traditions of the French will go to the French. Aha! He did not take into consideration that our people and our ancestors were proud, strong, independent Métis, and they went underground. And our relations, our ancestors, Dale, went underground with them.
Yes,
I have the stories for that, and
yes,
the writings and everything. So
and that's why I'm phoning you to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah. So this is why we really need to take and tell our story, the stories
yes.
of our ancestors. And when I go north, in the early days, yes, a lot of our people that went north, they were not literate in the written word, but they were experts, and they were very well educated in the traditional ways of our people in the north.
Yes, yes.
And people do
you
not
know,
give them credit.
Yes, I know. And you know, some they were saying that, you know, even my mom remembers saying that she says, well, our great-grandfather, that she says that he could speak the five languages. He could speak five languages.
Yes.
You know, so
exactly.
You know, and, yeah. So you know, and you know, when we see these, when the script came out and they were signing their ex name, I think they were doing that in protest because they didn't really want to tell the government that they knew what they were doing or talking about. So they were trying to act like.
But they
go
did
ahead.
When they could not read or write English.
Yeah.
And they were told to write in English, you know, their name, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they did their X.
That
did not mean that they were illiterate.
They were not illiterate.
They were very literate in our own language.
Yeah, they didn't want
and
to
they
reveal
they were very,
how,
very literate.
Yeah, they didn't want to reveal how much they really knew and how much they didn't want it. To let them know that what they were all about, so they were sorry.
Right.
But that's the way I could see it then. So,
yeah.
But yes, that's good. So right now you're residing in Edmonton, but you still work at the museum.
Oh
and,
yes. We have no money, but
there
we work there every day.
Yes, but tell us about the museum. Tell us some stories about the museum and maybe some of the struggles that you're going through and. You know, and
oh, we have some exciting things happening there. We have the a resource library. We have hundreds of books, and we have a volunteer that comes every week, and she's cataloging them. And hopefully, by the end of the summer, we're going to have those all on computer. Then we have a research facility.
Yeah.
And we have things in our research facility that nobody else has. I brought just one of our books here, and I have a report of the first Alberta Native Women's Conference held at the Mayfair Hotel in Edmonton, March the 12th to the 15th in 1968. And you should read it. Bill, you should read what our women have said in this book in 1968. Then we have a museum. We have a museum of artifacts. We have discovered, we always knew it, but it's finally been recognized, that we have been in this area here over 5,000 years.
Wow.
And we have the
there
museum
you go.
To, we, yeah, so we have that. Now what I'm doing now is I'm doing, and I've got it started now, we want to do, it would be, almost be, a traveling museum display for Aboriginal veterans for
mm-hmm.
what our, to recognize the wonderful work that our people, our men and women did during the War of 1812, the St. Albert Rifles, the Boer War, the First War, the Second World War, right straight up through to Iraq and Afghanistan. So that's what I've started there now. Then I've also started doing a history on Métis music and Métis dancing. Then we have a display for the RCMP, for our people that were scouts and things like that in the RCMP. Exciting, exciting things. This is what our children have to hear. They have to hear that about our heroes. You know, we don't need Davy Crockett.
No.
We have Jerry Potts. We don't need a whole lot of the American heroes because we have our own heroes, and they were braver and they were stronger than the Americans.
Yes, that's good.
And so, and I could, you know, and so that type of thing. Another thing that we have to tell our children is that our homeland is Rupert's Land. Rupert's Land goes down into the States. And our brothers and sisters in the States need to know that we're alive and well up here, and that we support them 100% because they were denied all their citizenship in the Métis movement.
Yes, I know that. That's right.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, that I saw a map, the first map of one of Canada, and as far as what it looked like, it was part of, it looked like it had the Columbia River running right down to Oregon, and then all of a sudden, when Canada became a country, they just used this imaginary north line that they did there, and that was it. I think it, what is our north boundary? Is it 60? Sort
49th
of
parallel in the north, but it's
49th parallel, and then they just said, well, we'll use the 49th parallel. And of course, you know, there you go. You got the, you left half of the Métis on the United States side, and there you go. And of course, now if you were trying to get your citizenship or something like this, they don't even recognize it. So there you go.
No.
So
they don't.
As a matter of fact, I remember my wife and I, Dale, we were in Yakima, and you know, and we brought our Red River cart down there for a display for one of the powwows down there, the United States powwow. So, for half an hour or more. Yeah, so, anyways, I saw this. You know, they never saw this Red River cart, and the chief came up to us and says, "What is this?" And he says, "Well, it's a Red River cart, and you know, this is how the Métis traveled." And oh, well, we've never seen one before. And then, you know, and I said, oh, well, here we are. We're Métis, and we're flying our flags. And they were opened their arms up to us, and it was just absolutely a great time to be there.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
wonderful.
And then we go into town on our way home, and we stopped at this little gas station to gas up, and there's a bingo hall. There's a huge bingo hall, and it's all brick. And then I said, well, I'm just going to walk around. And here's this huge mural of a Métis trading with the Yakima First Nation people.
Exactly.
And they got a Hudson's Bay blanket in there, and they're trading furs for the blanket. And they told us they never ever saw one. And this huge mural, I mean, there's the Red River cart right there. I just started to laugh. So you know, people don't realize that, you know, we traveled wherever the Red River cart would work.
Exactly. We worked quite closely with the Native students at the university. We are very close, and we're also working with the French community up here, because you cannot talk about the Métis without talking about the French, because that's part of our ancestors.
So
we have the French, we have the Oblates, and we have the, and of course, the Métis. So I'm working with Faculty Saint-Jean, which is the French university here, with our University of Alberta, with NAIT, which is our Northern Alberta Institute of Technology, and that's a huge, huge institution there, so that our little institute with no money is slowly, slowly really gaining a lot of prominence. The city of St. Albert has... They haven't donated it, but we have an old heritage house that we have, and they pay the utilities in it. So that's how we keep going there. But now is the time, I think, that we have to start looking for some funding. But I don't want to have government funding. Government funding controls you.
If we can
get project funding from the corporate sponsors, then we have an opportunity. Because what you're doing there in BC, what I'm doing here, what Richard Larson is doing, and the other small community museums, and what we're doing is we're telling Canadian history, and it's such a proud history, and such an exciting history, that they have a wonderful opportunity to help us spread it to the nations.
Yes, and I agree. And the struggles that we have, and it's a wonderful culture. You know, I mean, you know, there's a little community just outside of St. Albert's. It's called Villeneuve. You know, there's a story behind it, but nobody knows the story. You know, and you know.
Well, we know the story. They don't believe us, but we know the story.
Yeah, well, this is what I want to do. I want to hear about it. I want you to tell, because everybody that comes from British Columbia and they go through the Edmonton, they always see the sign. So, I really, you got to give us a little tune up about what this community was all about. So
well,
can you do that for us?
The white story, the white side of the community, tell the story that there was Frederick Villeneuve. There was a Frederick Villeneuve who was a newspaper man in St. Albert, and they say it was named after him. But my dad told me that was his dad, that was my grandfather, Severe Villeneuve's scripland. And two Frenchmen got him drunk one night, and he sold it to them for a bottle of whiskey.
Oh, for goodness.
And that's the town of Villeneuve. So we have the Métis story and we have the white man's story.
Yeah, there you go. So, I went back to Villeneuve and I got a little bit of a story, and he says that it was named after a postmaster that was from back in Montreal, and the town was named after a postmaster's son or something like this. So.
Oh, well, that's a different story than what I heard.
Oh, there you go. See?
Did. Yeah. But yeah. I'll believe our side.
Yes,
and
that's
so
what you...
funny, Dale, because Sharon Morin, who works at the, you must say, the Heritage in St. Albert, she found the script documents for that area there, and it has there that Severe Villeneuve, and it's the only one that has sold on it. So what they did when they got him drunk and they sold it to them, and they took him right down to the office, or the land office, or whatever it was, and they made him sign that it was sold.
So, wow.
And she said, and she showed it to me, and that's the only river lot that has a sold sign on it.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Yeah, so...
So I believe our story.
Oh, I think that I like that story too. That's even a better story. So tell us about some more community. Yeah, they're good. They're good stories. So tell us about some more community areas that have been going through struggles and stuff like that too.
Well, there we have here in Alberta, there is a huge a huge fight going on within the Métis political movement.
Okay.
And so here we go again with our history. On this book that we got here, the letters, the Métis letters, it tells that there was a very similar struggle taking place in the 1930s and the 40s, and really between 1932 and 1940. Where there was a struggle with the land. Now, Alberta is the only one that have Métis, and they call them settlements now, but they were called colonies in those days.
Oh.
And there was 12 of them. Now there's 8 left. But at that time, there was a group that wanted to go with the government and just be very subservient as far as settling the colonies were concerned. There was another group that said no. We have to stand up, and we have to be strong, and we have to demand our own rights. So there was the split. And that happened in the 30s.
Yeah.
In 1940, according to the letters, in 1940, then there was another movement that started taking place, and that's where the new association, the Métis Association, happened in 1940. That's what we know it now. So there was that struggle, and we have that same struggle going on today. This is why it's really important that we learn our history, Dale, because then we understand what the communities are going through today.
Yeah.
So we have two different factions, and how do we deal with it? Our communities are really struggling because there's a lot of money going through the organization, but it's not getting down to the communities. It's not. So our small communities are suffering. I have one community that I've worked with for many, many years, and I ran into some of the women a few months back, and they had moved into Edmonton here because the times and the conditions had not changed. Do you know that we are collecting books now for our preschool and our kindergartens up there because they have no books?
Oh,
we are living in the richest province in Canada.
Yes.
And our women and our children are still suffering the very same as they were 40 years ago when I worked up there.
Jeez. So our
women's shelters have no funding and no support. So we slowly gather things and we send them up there to help them. You know, it just breaks my heart when I you know, go there. But in the meantime, that doesn't help them. So we gather the books and stuff. And there's a group of wonderful, wonderful unsung heroes in St. Albert that go around and they gather the things and we send them up there. And it's not just junk. You can't send junk. You have to send things that people can start over with. The books are coming from the bookstores. And, you know, and it's, so this is what's happening in a lot of our communities.
Wow.
The smaller communities.
So there's still a power struggle out there, as we say.
Oh yes, big time.
What can be said about it? What can be done about it? What's your opinion about what's going on? And you know, I know we have struggles out here in British Columbia, but our issues aren't the same issues as yours, because your province is, which I've always had the respect, because it's, you know, it's a very old Métis community, and it's been established for how long? Over 75 years, 80 years?
That, oh, longer than that.
Because, longer than that, yes.
Oh, yeah. They organized, and they petitioned in the early 1840s, it was, or 1850s. They petitioned the Archdiocese of the Catholic Church to send a priest out there.
Wow.
So that's how long our... But when you look at history, Dale, you have to look at the Métis only ever really organized when there was a big issue. And when you look at the history, and you'll see that, they organized in the late 1800s because of the land issue. They organized, you know, in the 1840s because they felt they needed a priest out there. You know, your great-grandfather, my grandfather, these guys were born here in the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
My great-great-grandfather was born here, François Villeneuve, in 1803 or something like that. And we have that documented. So that, but when you look at what's going on today, we have better educated people. We have people that are working. We have professional people. We have lawyers. We have doctors. We have all these people here. What issue do we have that we can organize around?
Yes.
And the communities have to determine that.
Yes.
And I personally don't see any big issue.
Yeah.
And so the communities, and it's the communities and the people that have to stand up and demand whatever they feel they need in their communities.
Yeah.
And until they do that, we will always have this struggle.
Always have the struggle.
Yeah. Always have the struggle.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't stop people like you and I from
doing,
you know, having our museums and teaching our children so that when the time comes, they can stand up and be accountable. They can stand up and look at the issue and as human beings, not just as Métis, not just as Cree, not just as any other ethnic group, but as Canadians. And we always have to make sure of that. I tell everybody that my nationality is Métis, but my citizenship is Canadian.
Canadian, yes. You just made me proud. You just made me proud for saying that. Yes, that's yes. I've always had the respect because you're a nation, Alberta, and I, you know, I'm an Edmonton born there anyways, and of course, you know, always the best thing was my football team was the Eskimos in my life was, you know, growing up there, but I live here in British Columbia, and we have the same struggles as here, it's just that we forget that we got to keep teaching our young people the values, the family values, the struggles that we have got going, and well, like we still got a community in Kelly Lake that's probably one of the oldest communities here, and it's in the hobbles. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's shameful as far as I'm concerned, you know. But you know, and you don't hear too much about it because, like you say, if there's a big issue, I guess the community will stand up and fight for the stuff here. So, yes, it's been really you've been telling us some really interesting stuff about our history and stuff like that. And you know, so what is going on now that your goals are to do with the museum and you know, what would you like to see, you know, happen in the near future there?
In the near future? I think I've discussed it a bit with you. I think it's really important that we have our little Métis institutes all over. We have a wonderful little museum in Lac-La-Biche. We have another one in Fort Chip. We have them all over, but they're all struggling. But they're so important because that's where our stories will be told. And so what we have to do is develop a network of institutions, a network of museums, so that we can say, you can phone me up and say, now, Thelma, I'd like you to, do you have anything on a certain subject or something like that? And then we can exchange things. That, to me, I think is really important because that is reaching our children. If we don't reach our children now, Dale, we're a lost nation. And that's what's going to happen unless people like you and I. I'm going to tell you a story. Years ago, when I was organizing up north, and I was into this one community, and it was a big meeting. And the government people were up there, and they were saying, telling the people what they were going to do for them and everything like that. The chairman of that colony, when it got to my turn, he came up and he said to me, okay, now what are you going to do for us? And I looked at him, I said, I'm not going to do a damn thing for you. I said, I'll tell you and I'll show you how to do things, but you will do it, I won't.
Yeah.
And you know something? Out of that, there has been several leaders come from that community. And they have taken their rightful place, not only in their communities, but in the careers that they have chosen. And that really makes me proud. And they always tell me that they heard me when I said, I'm not going to do anything for you, but I will show you how to do it.
There you go.
And they learned. Yeah. That's what we need to do.
Yes. Yes. You know, I already started an exchange program with our museums. Like we had a little, let me tell you a little bit of our museum that was in Surrey after 25 years of being in this one location in Surrey, and the owner just happened to pass away, and of course this was the building just happened to be put into a trustee, and we were paying the rent on time and everything like that, and it was very affordable for us to do this, and of course this little museum was built into a trading post, and it was prior to before I came there. Like, we've been in existence since 1996, and how it became what we were was because, you know, they were auctioning off Louis Riel artifacts, and, you know, some of the elders down here just hey, we had enough. You're getting rid of our stuff. We want to go down there. They went down and protested. And a matter of fact, the collection of Louis Riel stuff is in the Glenbow Museum because we didn't have any place to put it. So that was that was the closest place that would relate to our stuff, right? So, and right now, after so many years, we got evicted in 2003, and you know, where was our leaders then to, you know, try to help us fight it off? And no, they weren't interested. You know, they were. It's again, it's a power issue of, you know, well, if you give full control, sort of thing. And but that wasn't what I'm talking about right now, because I really don't like getting into that. But what we did was, so we struggled along and we put it in storage, and I still pursued going to schools and teaching and taking it to the powwow, so we were recognized in our First Nation, because you got to remember, we were on the West Coast, and they were even harder to try to convince that, you know, Métis people were here too. So so then we started, putting it into we got a little bit of extra money. So what we did was we took it out and we collaborated with the North Fraser, which, thank God, they came to our aid for a little bit of time, and then all of a sudden our resources dried up again, and of course we weren't going to be any burdens on anybody. So what we did was we just had to pull it out, and right now the museum's artifacts were basically all at my home at the time, and I have a nice big storage area where we kept them, and I've got on the walls and inside the stuff there. But then when Richard had started this museum in Delia, that, you know, when he moved out there, that was, I asked Richard, I said, Richard, would you want to start an exchange program? We'll sign a little protocol agreement and sort of. And he said, hey, that sounds great. So right now, so are some of the BC artifacts that, you know, belong to the Michif Historical Society is in Alberta right now on tour. So, and this is why we, you know, came to you, and we want to do the same thing. We want to share some of the things that are in things, because, you know, like it says, most of our stuff is probably in Ottawa, in the Museum of Man, which, you know, it shouldn't be in Ottawa, because it doesn't belong to Ottawa. It belongs to the Métis people, and it should be in Métis hands and be looked after. But what you're right about this, what we need to do is we need to start a little circuit of Michif cultural societies and say, hey, we want our artifacts back. It's now time that we can share these with everything. And I'm trying to find somebody in Alberta, not Alberta, but Saskatchewan and even Manitoba that would be interested in joining this little circuit of ours, and I think this would be a very benefit thing for us to do. So what do you think if that's was your ideas? I know that when we were talking about it, that was your idea of doing it, and maybe we can get some private partnership to help us out.
Well, I think what we really have to look at here is, you take now Saskatchewan with the Gabriel Dumont Institute, and that's under the Meta Society of Saskatchewan. And so that it's under that control, so that there's no way that they would even be able to take and join us like this here. What we do is we make friends. We're friends of the Gabriel Dumont Institute. We're friends of the Métis Resource in Manitoba. And then eventually they will come on board. But there's no way that we can sell them on anything, because they're well established and they know what they're doing. So if we make their friends of the organization, and that's how we would do it, and network and things. A lot of things here now, with the artifacts that we have in the Michif Institute, I would have a difficult time in putting them out for display, because they're very, very delicate.
Yes.
And they have to be done. But what I'm doing is I'm developing now like a display of our Aboriginal veterans. And we're working on that, so that could be one. The Musée de Héritage, now that's Métis, that's museum in French. They have a traveling Métis museum, which is a Métis display that is really interesting. So we could look at that, look at the things that already are on display and then move them around.
There
so
you go.
So that's what we have to, you have to tread softly.
Yes, you,
know,
you betcha.
Because you don't
yes,
want
gonna,
to take and
destroy
definitely. Any relationship.
You betcha. This is what we're going to be talking about when we come out and visit you this time.
Yeah.
Well, Thelma, I really like to thank you for being on. I'm coming to the end here, and it's been a very, very enlightening talking to you, and, you know, we'll be keeping in touch. So I really like to thank you very much for coming on.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I hope that I haven't destroyed anybody's ideals or anything like that, but, you know, you call a spade, and it's good for debate.
There you go.
Really
that's
good
right.
Debate.
And I heard that maybe people are debatable.
Yes, definitely.
There
we love
go.
A good argument.
You betcha. You
okay?
Betcha. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. God bless. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I would like to thank the listeners for tuning in and our directors and sponsors of the BBS radio station for allowing us to present this program to you. Next week, Friday, May the 2nd, our guest will be Earl Belcourt from beautiful Vancouver Island, British Columbia, Canada. Earl helped found the Métis Nation of BC in 1992 and is one of the founding members of the Métis Provincial Council of BC in 1996, former vice president of the MPC, the Métis Provincial Council of BC, and is now involved in various aspects of Métis politics and rights, as well as involved with the federal politics. Please stay tuned next week at the same time, starting at 7:55 Pacific Standard Time, to visit me and Earl, and have a good week, and take care. Until then, Marci, our word of the day, meaning thank you.